Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
We're going to take a little time to look up Steve Carlton's career numbers, which, of course, are incredible. Won 20 games with the Cardinals in 71. Then, of course, the big trade to the Phillies when he won 27 with a team that was just awful. 20-game winner in 76 when they finally made the playoffs. 23-77. 24-game winner when they won the championship in 80, and a 23-game winner in 82. Postseason, though, 6-6 in his career.
Really?
Now, three of those wins were, yeah. Well, so I said before. I mean, I said Andy Pettitte has a better postseason record than Steve Carlton does.
No, I know you said that. I mean, it just, you know.
You think I lie on the show?
No, I don't think you lie. Well, sometimes. But anyway, no, that surprises me, though. I never really thought of him as being an average postseason pitcher. I mean, I think of him as being such a solid left-hander, and for so many years, I didn't really realize what the postseason's record was.
First three postseasons he pitched in, he was not a winning pitcher once. And then in 78, he broke through with a win. Then in 80, he was brilliant. He was 3-0 in the postseason. And then he lost twice in 81. He was 0-2, and then he was 2-1 in 83 when they made it to the World Series. It's just the way it's worked out. But yeah. Now he hasn't had the opportunities with the extra level of playoffs that Andy Pettitte had, nor the team around him. But there's no doubt that Steve Carlton, when you look at his remarkable career, and it was a remarkable career, when, you know, 329 wins and 244 losses, pretty good. I mean, he has in his career, 56, 29, 76, 85 more wins than Pettitte. He also has 101 more losses. But again, part of that is he didn't pitch. You know, I mean, he went, you know, 87, he pitched for Cleveland and Minnesota. He went 6-14. You know, he was at the Giants that one year. He went 9-14. Yeah, so. With the White Sox. I mean, those moments where he's did extend his career. But he was 6-6 in the postseason. You didn't realize that, did you?
I did not, no.
And you're... See,
well, you said 3-0 in 80, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one that I remember.
Right, well... I mean, I feel like I spend half the show killing your youth.
You know, it does. I mean, it is a little depressing because I always thought of, you know, that 1980. Well, if you're a Philly fan, 1980 was about the only year you could think of for a long, long time.
Sure. And he's 3-0 that year, though. I mean, he was 3-0 in the postseason. So that means outside of that one year, he was 3-6.
But the thing that gets me is, you know, it's right after somebody retires, or in the case of, and this is a perfect example here, talking about Steve Sable. I mean, right after somebody passes, we're discussing whether they need to be in the Hall or not. And, you know, I never was a huge fan of waiting to put somebody in. But sometimes I think it's not such a bad idea because then you can analyze things a little bit more objectively.
You know, there's certain things that come up right away. You know, first of all, this thing about the Hall of Fame that I just find irritating is that, look, it's obvious certain people should be in. And maybe you gotta wait a couple of years to kind of, but for goodness sakes.
I'm not saying there's not the obvious ones.
Hey, Burt Blyleven. Now, he won 287 games. Like, you can't be an idiot and win 287 games.
Not completely, okay? Anyway.
No, but I'm saying, though, you have to be really good. I mean, Tommy John had a great career. Not in. I mean, why do you have to think about Jim Rice for a long time? Are you kidding me?
I was trying to set you up and then forget it. But my point is, sometimes waiting that certain amount of time isn't a bad thing.
I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, I can see waiting a little while, like 3 years. I mean, it's 5-year wait. And then, of course, in the baseball thing, I mean, Hank Aaron was not a unanimous pick, really. Willie Mays wasn't. Mickey Mantle wasn't. Ted Williams wasn't. Babe Ruth wasn't. Ty Cobb wasn't. They're not unanimous. Like, there's some schmo that sits there and goes, no, I don't think so. Huh? What? Nolan Ryan's name comes up. No. Come on. You just got to sit there and you shake your head sometimes. I mean, Steve Carlton was a unanimous Hall of Fame selection. Now I can see some debate over like an Andy Pettit. Okay, I can see them debating Andy Pettit, debating Steve Carlton and not voting for them. There are people that consciously didn't vote for him. Mike Schmidt. Mike Schmidt is not a unanimous Hall of Famer. Roberto Clemente. Lou Gehrig. Nobody's ever been unanimous. Just like a professor once in college. People drop this guy's class left and right. You want to know why? Because he stated at the beginning of class that he's never given an A in his life. Okay? Because nobody does perfect work. All these kids in the class had 4.0 grade point averages, dropped the class. Dropped it. And none of them had, all of them had never dropped a class before. I mean, after a while, there has to be some common sense as to who's in and who's not.
Line one has Roger would like to chime in on this conversation.
Hi, Roger. How are you today?
Well, good. I'm going to take the angle that I don't think Andy Pettit is a Hall of Famer at all. I think Andy Pettit was a very good pitcher on mostly great teams. And I think I would say the same thing about Tommy John. Tommy John pitched a lot of years. I would say he probably pitched like 23 years. Mm-hmm. And when you thought of the Dodgers during Tommy John's time, you know, when he began his career, that might have been the tail end of Don Drysdale. But then you had Don Sutton, and Don Sutton was always the ace. And then after Don Sutton, Earl Hershiser was kind of the ace. And Tommy John kind of spanned all these generations. But he was never... I would even argue that Tommy John was behind Bert Hooten and right in the mix with Charlie Huff. So he was like maybe the third or fourth guy in the rotation, but he pitched a lot of years, and we still talk about him today because the procedure, if anything, you could make an argument for Tommy John or his doctor getting into the Hall of Fame based on the contributions of Tommy John's surgery. But I would say Andy Pettit was just a really good pitcher, like usually a number two or number three guy.
Right.
On teams that were almost perennial playoff teams. And, you know, there was always a C.C. Sabathia or Roger Clemens or somebody else in front of them in the rotation. And I don't think he's a Hall of Famer.
Yet, if I had a choice between Andy Pettit CC Sabathia and Roger Clemens to pitch a postseason World Series game for me, and I need to win the game, I'd pick Pettit. He's been better in the postseason than the other two guys.
Yeah, there's no arguing that.
I just look at a guy like that where he has good regular season stats. In fact, really good regular season stats. What, 243 and 144, right? And you're right, playing on great teams. But money on the table. Money on the table, where I think that's where you start finding out who has it and who doesn't. He's 19 and 10. 19 and 10, even though you're surrounded. Now you're playing the best at this point. You're playing the best teams, the hottest teams. You're playing the ones that have won their division, won their way to the World Series, won a couple of playoff rounds to meet you. And he's pitched really well each time, as opposed to a guy like, for example, Roger Clemens, great pitcher, great career, and so forth, but in the postseason has had very mixed results when it came time to have money on the table and to make it happen. Andy Pettit, and he's done it over a long period of time. It wasn't like he had a great postseason, and it wasn't like the Yankees had winning teams all those years. The Yankees have only won one time since 1999, or since 2000, I should say. So he's been consistently good, and I think he is not going to make the Hall of Fame. But if I had a vote, I would vote for him in the Hall of Fame, because I think when the money's been on the table, he's been on the table.
Yeah, I agree with you about Burt Blyleven. I think Burt Blyleven should have gone into the Hall of Fame a lot more quickly than he did, because Burt Blyleven pitched on mostly good teams at best. He didn't pitch on a lot of championship-caliber teams, and a lot of people forget that Carlton really didn't pitch on good teams until 1976, and he had some bad investments, which is why he had to keep pitching. It wasn't that Carlton was trying to pad his statistics. He had some bad investments, and he needed to pitch until his arm fell off.
So no, exactly, because there's a guy I know that's announcing right now that's up in his 70s. Okay, he's announcing baseball. You want to know why he's announcing still at this? And I'm not going to say who it is. Got killed in the Bernie Madoff thing.
There you go.
And that's why he's still working at this point. And I'm not going to get into who it is, but that's what happened to him. And, I mean, things like that happen. And you're right, Carlton. I mean, because Carlton, he was off the charts Hall of Famer before the tail end of his career, when he was just kind of hanging on and doing exactly what you were saying. He was already way off the chart. He pitched on bad teams. He pitched great. He pitched on great teams and pitched great. The irony is that in postseason play, where there were more limited opportunities, division play, the division series now compared to back then, but he's still 6-6. Which is interesting. But the one year he had it was the year they won the whole thing, and they don't win it without him in 1980.
Sure, and in the two World Series years, he was 5-1, and the Phillies weren't a very good playoff team either. Two kind of go hand in hand. They were not a good postseason team. Except for those 2 years.
Exactly right. And then he was younger, but he pitched on a couple of really good Cardinal teams and didn't pitch well in the World Series. But that was early in his career before he really had established himself, and it was his last year with the Cardinals in 71 where he won 20 games. And then, of course, they made the ill-fated trade, with Philadelphia.
For Rick Wise, I think, right?
Rick Wise. The one thing Rick Wise could do better than Steve Carlton was hit. He was heck of a hitter. And Wise was also
a hitter.
Yeah.
But Carlton was a heck of a hitter, too.
Yeah.
You know? And Rick Wise, I think, pitched a no-hitter and also hit at least one home run, if not two, in the same game.
Yeah, he did. And then Rick Wise eventually was dealt to the Red Sox and was a 19-game winner in 1975 when they went to the World Series.
Yeah. There you go.
So, you say Andy Pettit? No.
Nope.
I say Andy Pettit. I think about it. Kevin, we'll tell you. Roger and I will tell you later who Andy Pettit is.
I'm aware. Thanks.
Thank you.
Roger, thanks. Our number 272-9625, 272-9625. Now, again, I'm a diehard Red Sox fan, so me advocating for Andy Pettit must indicate to you what a tough hombre I thought he was.
I was going to say, that says a lot. That says a lot.
Okay, I'm a diehard Red Sox fan. Right? He went to pitch. I was like, oh, great. They're running him out again. You know, but Roger's right. He would not be. He was never the selection to pitch game one. He was never the selection to pitch game one. So, but 19-10 in the postseason. I mean, you add that way 244 wins. So you're talking about 263 wins in his career. Between the two, not bad, not bad. I mean, I look and I see Roger's point, you know, but see, I'm a little looser on what I see for the Hall of Fame. Okay, I'm a little looser on what I see. To me, Pedro Martinez is a Hall of Fame pitcher.
What's your criteria?
Okay. Eye test.
Can you be a little bit more? Can you elaborate?
Sure. Sure. I mean,
well, you look at him and it's like he's a Hall of Famer?
I look at him. I look at the body of work in his career. How dominant was the guy? How good was the guy? How long was he at the peak of his career? You know, were you a 3 or 4 year flash in the pan, or were you a dozen year? And I think the criteria has to be different now on 5 day rotations than it was 20 years ago. I mean, we're never going to see a 300 game winner in the majors again. It's not going to happen. I mean, do I think Curt Schilling's a Hall of Famer? Yes.
Well, let me just,
I do think Curt Schilling's a Hall of Famer.
Let me pick somebody that got less than 80% getting into the Hall of Fame and a recent one, Burt Blyleven. What's your thought there?
He should be in. He won 287 games in his career.
Lost 250.
He was on
though.
One world champion. Yeah, but he was on the Twins all those years. Okay, and he finally got to the Pirates. He was with the Pirates, helped them win in 1979. But you know, part of it is why does everyone talk about Steve Carlton's 27 win season in 1972? Because they stunk. I mean, to have a lousy team around you, and in that year the Phillies were lousy, and win 27 games, he won almost half their games that year. Burt Blyleven won 287 games and did not pitch in the era with Harmon Killebrew and Tony Oliva around him.
There were a lot of double-digit loss years, though. But like, and a lot of them happened with the Twins in the 70s.
Again, sometimes when you're the whole thing, I think he should be in. I'd put Curt Schilling in because Curt Schilling, you know, everyone knows what he did with the Phillies in 83, but then he goes to Arizona and he wins, and he goes to Boston and he wins. I mean, and again, same story, money on the table. What does the guy do with the money on the table? Okay. Even the last game he pitched in his career was a World Series win. I mean, will Schilling wow you with? I mean, are you going to sit there and say, "Wow, he doesn't exactly have Walter Johnson numbers"?
See, Schilling was 216 and 146 lifetime,
mm-hmm.
with a 3.46 ERA.
Right. Now get to the postseason.
I don't have that specific what I'm looking at now.
But you get to the postseason, okay? Money on the table. Okay? Money on the table. 11-2.
Yeah, 11-2 with a 2.23 ERA.
Yeah.
Four complete games and two shutouts.
Yeah. I'm sorry, he makes it. Okay, now, his overall number, 216 and 146, does that make it? No.
But then, don't we get back to the same argument we have in football then? With a player making the NFL Hall of Fame? Well, you know, he had a great career, but he didn't win the big game.
Well, no, I think you weigh that differently. I mean, it depends on the teams you're on. For example, and you don't do flash in the pants. Timmy Smith of the Washington Redskins is not a Hall of Fame player. He played one Super Bowl with 202 yards. Okay? He's not Jim Brown. But there are certain guys, Barry Sanders. Barry Sanders, Hall of Famer. Okay? Barry Sanders, Hall of Famer. Never even played in an NFC Championship game. I guess he played in one. They played against the Redskins once, right? Played in one NFC Championship game in his career. Okay? Ernie Banks, Baseball Hall of Famer. So you weighed it differently. Lynn Swann gets in because of what he did in postseason play.
Oh, I definitely
because, look,
agree.
Because they had to spread the ball. They had Stallworth. They had Franco Harris. Flyer. You know,
NFL
what I mean?
Films helped him.
But no, he helped himself. Money on the table, especially in Super Bowls 10 and 13, and even in 14, he was phenomenal.
Yeah, but if you watch, if you talk to anybody, they're going to remember the catches, as you said, from the big games, but from NFL films more than anything else.
Yeah, but the voters that do this don't care about NFL films.
Peter King, for example.
I mean, the voters who are in this don't care. Right? They don't care. Okay? That's not their bag. Okay? So I think you have to weigh certain individuals differently. All right? And because you have to remember what kind of team they were on. Schilling's fortunate enough in his career to get there with the Phillies in 93. He's then fortunate enough with Arizona to be there in 1 and 2. And then fortunate enough to be a part of the Red Sox in 4 and 7. Okay, so he's surrounded by good teams that make it. But he's a big reason why they make it. And you have to remember, early in his career, he pitched, 2 years with Baltimore? He had 9 starts. Then finally he had, 35 relief appearances with the Orioles in 1990. He's a relief pitcher. So, but does he make it? Yeah, to me, he's 11-2 in the postseason play on the biggest stage in the pressure moments. And believe me, there was more pressure on the 2004 Red Sox than how many teams combined. When you haven't won in 86 years and everybody knows it, and he pitched the two most significant games in Red Sox history. In New York, and then the game I was at against the Cardinals. Hurt, and he pitched.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Once again, Kevin making a strong pitch for Derek Lowe in the Hall of Fame.
No, just on my fantasy team.
Oh, I forgot. We're back to that again.
Listen, my fantasy baseball team is truly a fantasy. Actually, it's more like a nightmare.
Your life is kind of a fantasy, isn't it?
Sometimes a nightmare.
Wow. Starting with this segment right here?
This is kind of nightmarish, yeah.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. Well, we've been talking about Hall of Famers. You mentioned Jerome Bettis. He should definitely be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I never understood why he wasn't right away.
He can still get there, but yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have to let the entire body of work play out. I mean, I've really had a lot of people talk about whether or not Eli Manning's a Hall of Famer. as soon as you explain to me what else he's supposed to do. And once again, now here's a guy who last year set an NFL record with 14 fourth quarter touchdown passes. Lost in what happened in the end of the Tampa Bay Giants game is that the Giants scored 25 fourth quarter points, and he did it again. He's been, you look at a full 60-minute game, and, I mean, there are parts of it where, you know, and it doesn't matter whether it's this season, last season, his first Super Bowl year, whatever. There are parts of it where he struggles and looks confused, and then there are other parts of it where he has complete mastery of what's going on. But the dude's won two Super Bowls, and he's won so many playoff games on the road. And I'll be honest, they have a really good offensive line. I mean, that is not exactly Jerry Rice and Raymond Berry he's been throwing to. And he hasn't exactly had Barry Sanders lining up behind him. Brandon Jacobs, really? So he's had a really good career. And as I said, look, winning's hard. I mean, winning's hard. We mentioned Steve Carlton before. You know how many world championship rings Steve Carlton has?
One.
Two.
Well, one of them, 84?
No, he's on the 67 Cardinals.
I was going to say, wait a minute, that wasn't right. Oh, I forgot about that one.
He was 0-1 in the World Series against the Red Sox, but he still was on that team. So he's two. Great career. Two. As I point out, that's what makes, to me, sports so rewarding. I mean, winning is hard. It's hard. I've always told you, well, Peyton Manning needs to cement his legacy and, you know, two Super what? He won a Super Bowl. It's hard to win a Super Bowl. If it was so easy, how come Tom Brady has three rings instead of five? Why is he 3-2 in the Super Bowl now? If it's that easy. Why is Ben Roethlisberger not 3-0, he's 2-1?
I ask myself that too.
But I'm saying, though, the reason is it's hard. Okay, the Packers were the better team than the Steelers. That's why they beat them. Okay? I mean, the Steelers did not play them that day. Green Bay's just a better team in that particular year. But it's hard. Yeah, I mean, I always used to laugh. I mean, I'll bring up something that's in your wheelhouse, Mario Andretti. The greatest drivers of all time. He's won Le Mans. He's won Daytona. Right? And he's, quote, only won one Indianapolis 500. You know how hard it is to win the Indianapolis 500? It's really hard to win the Indianapolis 500.
But that's the highlight one. That's the one that everybody looks at, even if you're a fan or not.
But he's won it. He won it.
But you expect a driver of that caliber, though, to win more than one, you know, along the line. I mean, AJ was a good driver. He won four of them, but
he won the Indianapolis 500. I'm not going to sit here and tell you Mario Andretti's career is a failure because he won only one. It's hard to win it. He won it. Okay, when they run out Indianapolis 500 winners and they roll them around the track, guess what? He's one of them. Okay, he didn't win 4-3. He had disappointment. Did he go to the winner's circle in his STP car with Andy Granatelli in 1969? And it bothers you, I know all that.
No, actually, I'd be disappointed if you didn't know that one.
I'm just saying, but he won it. And he won it after having a crash in practice that week.
Okay, now that impressed me that you knew that.
Okay? But it's not easy to win. I mean, look at the Houston Astros. They've been to the World Series once. They've been in business for 50 years. 50 years. that been to the World Series once didn't win it. I mean, the Mets won twice, up and down, up and down, up and down. It's just hard to do. I mean, look at how long it took the Phillies to win. Then look at how long it took them to get back. And I think people take winning for granted. And for some people, it's just too easy, and it's not easy. Thus, winning multiple times is incredibly impressive. And it takes a short window. There's only a short window of opportunity to win in one's life. Very short. That's why when you do see the dominance of a Tiger Woods on a golf course, 14 majors the way he won them. Okay? But now you're seeing how hard it is for him to break through again. It's difficult to win. There is as talented an individual in his sport as you can ask for. And guess what? Not there. It's just not easy. And we're always looking too often at the negative. Okay? John McEnroe. He never won the French Open. Okay, but he won Wimbledon, he won the U.S. Open, he won Australia. Okay. Phil Mickelson never won the U.S. Open, blew the U.S. Open in Shinnecock Hills. He's won four majors in his career. Okay, which puts him in a category of what? A half dozen people in the history of the world?
Let's take it to the other side now. What about a guy who... like a Melky Cabrera, for instance, who's serving a suspension, but still has a shot to win some postseason honors, or a guy
what
like...
postseason? He's not going to win any postseason honors. What's he going to win? MVP?
Batting title?
Irrelevant. Doesn't matter. I mean, what does that do for you? I'm talking about winning.
No, I understand.
I'm not talking about... I'm not talking about I hit 380 this year and like took care of myself.
No, I realize that. I'm just saying, should players that have those positive tests, a drug test, be able to win those things, go to the Hall of Fame, that sort of thing, even if they've had stellar careers?
You got to sit there and you got to weigh it. I mean, you have to sit there and weigh it. I mean, if I have a vote, does Roger Clemens make it? Yes. If I have a vote, does Pete Rose make it? Yep. Pete Rose's indiscretions were as a manager, not as a player. Not his playing career. For example, John Wooden is in the Basketball Hall of Fame twice, you know. John Wooden is a Basketball Hall of Famer for his playing career at Purdue. And then was re-elected to the Basketball Hall of Fame as a coach. Pete Rose should be in for what he did as a player. Not as indiscreet, you know, and should not be held out. I mean, he should not have a job in baseball again because of his indiscretions as a manager, but that shouldn't keep him out of the Hall of Fame. Believe me, I was extremely angry that he bet on games the way he did when he was a manager, to the point where I said, that's it, he's done. But I've changed over time. Okay? As a player, he should be in. And to be honest with you, it would be a popular move if he made it. So I think he should be in as a player. I think Shoeless Joe Jackson should be in as a player. Those players were all, now regardless of the situation, they were all found not guilty. I mean, he should be in. Does it matter now he's passed away? Yeah, it probably doesn't matter at all now because he's passed away. But Pete Rose is still very much alive, and he had himself a Hall of Fame career. Nobody had more hits. And guess what? He just played hard. His indiscretions happened as a manager once his playing days were over.
What about Barry Bonds?
Barry Bonds should be in. And even if you take out, quote, his steroid years, he had a Hall of Fame career. It's like Alex Rodriguez should be in. You take out his years, he's still a Hall of Famer. And you have to have the intelligence to look at it and say, okay, Bonds hit, what was Bonds hit? 762 home runs in his career. You know, say you really believe that he was on the juice for all day. Say you believe all that. He probably still had 450 to 500 when he wasn't. Plus stole bases, plus was outstanding, and plus the Pirates were a playoff team when they had him, and the second he left, they weren't, along with Bobby Bonilla and Doug Drabik.
What if he was guilty of steroids? Or what if he admitted it in Mark McGwire's case? Does that change anything?
See, I would vote McGwire in.
No, see, I think that has to change it. I think that has to change it.
I mean, first of all, McGwire was not, in 1998 when he hit 70 home runs, he was taking Andro. Everybody knows it. Why? The bottle was sitting right there in the locker. Why? Because it was not on the banned substance list.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. I see.
Yeah,
what? I see what you're saying. I do.
I mean, you have to be smart about these things. Rick DeMont in 1972 lost his 400-meter gold medal because he was taking an asthma medication. Gee, Rick can't breathe without it.
Yeah, but that's the thing. What was the intent? Was the intent because you needed it to feel better, or you needed it so you didn't have an asthma attack? I mean, what was the intent of taking what Mark McGwire did?
A lot of times in steroids, it's because of recovery. I mean, people aren't saying, let's talk about the Geisinger Medical Center. Let's find out how many people are actually on steroids at the Geisinger Medical Center right now.
But again, what was the intent?
Right, recovery. These people work out, and in the process of their workout, what it did was it allowed them to recover faster. You still have to have the hand-eye coordination to hit the darn thing.
I agree, but you're going to have to convince me a lot more on that one.
I understand.
The intent that he took that was so he could recover faster.
Bigger, stronger. You get bigger and stronger because you're recovering faster. I mean, it all comes together. You get bigger, stronger, quicker, the whole thing, and it helps you recover because then you're out there lifting more weights again. Are steroids bad for you? Absolutely. But he was taking Andro, and Andro was not on the banned substance list. It is now. And again, I'm a little looser on these things than others. Look, we watch these guys perform. Sammy Sosa? No. Okay, not only with the problem with that, but, how long was he playing with a cork bat?
Well, I wasn't even going to bring that up because I thought that would be an automatic no.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just plain out and out cheat. I mean, there's no gray area there at all.
I mean, and sometimes an incident taints your career for a long time. Juan Marichal with John Roseboro. Juan Marichal's a first ballot Hall of Famer based on his career. Was penalized for a period of time because of the Roseboro incident. I mean, there's just a lot of factors that go into it. And again, I go back, what do I go back to?
What did they do when the money was on the table?
And the eyeball test. Where you look at a guy and say, geez, that guy's darn good. That's the bottom line is that, I look at somebody and say, man, I'll tell you, that guy's really good. And there's different, there can't be a single standard for this, okay? You can't look at Barry Sanders' career and say, in the postseason, against Green Bay, he had that day where he had, 3 yards on 20 carries up at Lambeau. Remember that? okay? Or he did nothing. Didn't perform well in the postseason. I mean, my goodness, Jim Brown was not a great postseason performer. Jim Brown had in the 64 championship game, had a good game. 65 championship game, had a good game. Not a great game, a dominant game. But that's still Jim Brown. You watch him run the football, it's unbelievable, off the charts. Barry Sanders, unbelievable, off the charts. Then you have a guy like Emmitt Smith who combined both. I mean, Walter Payton, great regular seasons.
But this also goes back to your eye test, because Barry Sanders did it with not a great team.
Nothing around him. Ernie Banks did a lot with very little around him. Yeah, certain guys are just in that position. You know, certain guys, you know, benefit like, because they have great players around them. No doubt about it. I mean, look at all the former Celtics are in the Hall of Fame. They were part of great teams, but as individuals, I mean, Bill Russell was only like, you know, Bill Russell's only, a 16 to 18 point a game scorer in the NBA. But he did everything else. So, I mean, each one has to be taken on their own merit. And part of the merit, for example, back to the original on Andy Pettit, is 19 and 10 with the money on the table is really good. Curt Schilling. Okay, 214 game winner in his career. Okay, money on the table, 11 and 2. Three world championships. Pedro Martinez, not great in the postseason for the most part. Really pitched two great postseason games. Three. He pitched a great game against the Yankees in the playoffs, I think, in 2001. He pitched a great game against Cleveland in relief in 1999. And the last appearance he made with the Red Sox was Game 3 of the World Series. He was unbelievably good. It was the winning pitcher. But he had a mixed bag. 2003 was rocky, and you know. But doggone, he's a Hall of Famer. I know we need to take a break. So let's take a quick break here. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
At Sunbury Motors, the rewards are many. And the regrets? Well, the regrets just don't happen. That's because no matter what vehicle you buy from Sunbury Motor Company, you are guaranteed to be satisfied. Not only when you first get that new or used car, truck, or SUV, but when you have your vehicle serviced, you'll always have the best experience possible from start to finish. Talk about variety being the spice of life? Well, at Sunbury Motor Company, you have the luxury of choosing from all the best brands like Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln. Each and every vehicle comes with awesome service and financing plans that fit your budget and are super easy to afford. You can even submit a financing application online and calculate the value of your trade-in. Ask about Sunbury Motors Tire Rewards Program. Service, parts, body shop, and quick lane too. New or used, the best vehicles come from Sunbury Motor Company. Visit sunburymotors.com to see all their new and used inventory, and visit the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury or Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Great to have you with us here on the show today as we move forward. Dan Marino, perfect example. You have to judge him differently than others based on what he had around him. I mean, the Dolphins were never very good defensively. Offensively, he kept them in every single game. You know? And just winning is not enough. Jim McMahon is not a Hall of Fame quarterback. As an example.
Oh, that I agree 110%.
No, I mean, again, it's just, to me, there's no standard except you look at somebody and you say, you know what? My standard for Andy Pettit was not what he did between April 1st and September 30th. His numbers are good. He's 100 games over 500, so they're good. But money on the table? This thing's all about championships, all right? Some guys are blessed with great talent around them. Andy Pettit did. Dan Marino didn't have that in the NFL because the defense was so poor. So different standard, but to me, they both should be in.